that's used by a number of school districts to do all of their coursework. There's an initiative at the state level that requires all students to have a portfolio of their accomplishments over the years. This is part of their graduation requirements in a few years. So third graders are now building their portfolios. And that's being done in Moonfolio, gotta love it, which was written by a local member from Hudson, New Hampshire, no less. And that is the Seacoast Technology Center out in Pelham. It's actually a center of excellence for that. Just none of these people are also busy, they don't talk to the locals. So there is a lot of educational initiative going on, and I think we just need to try to reestablish some dialogue with those folks. I would love to have the Seacoast Technology Center come in and do a LUG presentation on what we're doing in schools, because I bet a number of LUG members would be willing to volunteer if they realize that people are having problems configuring PHP on the Linux servers at their local schools. Oh, I know how to do that, you know?
And there's also a lot of the local school guys use NISTE as a resource.
NISTE,
I forget the expansion.
I don't remember the...
Who cares what it stands for? What is it?
It's like, it's the New Hampshire, like at each school has like a tech person. That tech person typically belongs to the NISTE group. It's a
statewide school techies.
For school techies. And they have a big conference in Nashville each year. So if you wanted to hit all 240 or whatever of those guys, probably the big leverage way to do that is to work with the NISTE guys to
catalog. Could you track down there? They must have a website or an office or something.
NISTE.org. I'm not making this up.
NSTE?
Yeah.
.org.
.org. Ed Lawson and Bill Sconce work regularly with these folks. The Krista McAuliffe Conference is held the week after Thanksgiving, going into December, at the what used to be the Sheraton Tower, and has been for several years. And Ed and Bill often do presentations there. There was somebody from the Hanover group who actually sets up the lab there. Mm-hmm. What a great story. Sets up a lab of 60 computers.
Sheraton.
Built an entire infrastructure over the weekend in a hotel lobby and then strip it down again. So there is a lot of that activity going on. I think it's just the LUG is oblivious to the efforts that are being made. It would be great to reach out and talk to
somebody. It just seems like, you know, hey, look, big pile of Linux. Maybe the Linux user group should at least know about it.
I know. In fact, in the Nashville Sheraton, there's in Conference Room C, if you look up in the ceiling, there's a T1 jack that's always on. No one ever pays for it.
Don't ask, don't tell. Okay.
Verizon forgot about it. He's really
cool.
Gary is T1 for a couple of days. That's right.
I'll be sure to redact that from the audio file.
I'm not seeing little blinky lights like I was seeing before. Is it still recording?
Red light.
Okay, there it goes.
Red light means recording.
All right. I have broached the subject with the Krista McAuliffe folks and did the same with the Software Association of New Hampshire about what would it take for our nonprofit organization to have a table in the corner in the dark. We're not asking for anything other than a little space to hand out some brochures and free discs. And the answer has been, it's $1,000 for a vendor booth. And I explained, we're not a vendor, we have no money, it's $1,000 for a vendor booth. And wasn't able to get past that.
What would you trade us if we came in and gave you a course in free software to some of your members that are coming to your conference?
It's $1,000 for a vendor booth.
That's exactly, I spoke at SwanH the year after you did, and boy, they were still talking about that. But that's another story.
Was it good or bad?
It was memorable.
Oh, okay.
Stuck in the box.
That still doesn't tell me if it was good or bad.
That's right.
I still haven't figured out what that group does, but I don't think they have either. So.
No, they haven't either. That's one of their big problems.
They have conferences.
And now they are very interested in being the publicity arm for their GNH look. They were thrilled when they heard we were having 7 meetings a month and wanted our meeting announcements sent to them. So I'm now channeling that, so you'll see more GNH.
Did you tell them the Linux bubble has already burst?
No, well, not for them. They're just
catching VA up. Linux stock where?
Too late. They're just catching up on that. But they were adamant about the booth. Essentially, they have fixed costs from the facility where they're renting. They were doing the Wayfarer, and the Wayfarer is quite the union shop. It's $300 to set up a table. Well, electricity, that's extra. So they weren't making $1,000 from the tables. Yeah, they might have been making
$1,000.
Yeah, and they can be a challenge. This year, they did not have as much of a vendor presence. I didn't open up the discussions with them again this year. But the Krista McAuliffe operation, I got the same response. Now, maybe Ed Lawson might have a better discussion with them about that, because Ed's been involved in that organization.
In the eyes of many organizations, including the government, I might add, you pretty much come down to these individuals and their businesses. If your goal of your business does not include making money, you're still a business.
Yep. Yeah, and some discussions I've had was that, you know, Microsoft has a booth at the Krista McAuliffe conference, and they pay $1,500 per table. And Oracle has booths and they pay $1,500 a table. And to let anyone else in and not charge them $1,500 a table would make it a problem for all of their vendors.
Well, actually, but you know, that's just wrong, because what happens at large trade shows like Linux World is that there's, you know, .org pavilion, and you get a certain amount of space in the .org pavilion, and you have to be a nonprofit to go in there. And so this is, it's not necessarily true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but I was just not able to find the person who was enlightened to recognize that. They hadn't been approached in.
What about other groups like Rotary or, you know, other business groups that are, you know, because, you know, so what if we don't talk to SWAT? So what if we just talk to the Better Business Bureau and go to one of their meetings and talk to them about free software and stuff?
Chambers of Commerce, I think, is what you're looking for there.
Chamber of Commerce.
Yep. If anyone is involved in their local Rotary, Chamber of Commerce, or Better Business Bureau, certainly.
Better Business Bureau is okay.
That's not really
what they're getting.
Rotarians are into voluntary activities, social
things. Talks about the trees.
And like Lug means, they're always desperate for speakers.
But the Rotary people, you go at them a different way. You say, you're trying to do volunteer work and stuff like that, well, why not use free software to do it? Why do you have to use...
Because they get all that stuff for free from Microsoft.
That's always a resistance, but it's
worth it. We're all business owners themselves, so they all care about profit.
Public libraries. Bill Sconce had an experience. Did he post that to the board, or did he just CC me on everything individually?
More the latter.
He tends to be a CC guy.
He posted basically on the day of the event that... Yep. He was, you know, throwing everything together at the last minute.
Was it Plainfield, some little town in Massachusetts just over the border that starts with the key? Okay, sorry. Funny memory. Plastow.
That's in Massachusetts. Yeah. And that's Plastow. That's New Hampshire.
In any case,
I didn't hear the part.
Bill and one of his buddies had found a library that was very interested in hosting some open source presentations. And they went down and they had 8 people signed up in advance, and they pepperled. Might have
that was yes. And,
now that I'm in my
they did their song state. And dance, and they showed Linux, and they also showed the Open CD, which really got people's attention. And the students want a follow-on course in the GIMP and in Scribus and in OpenOffice, and we're very enthused with these kind of applications that were available. So the audience is out there. The question is finding them and, you know, going through the effort of making a presentation. So Bill has some learning experience he could share with us about
that
activity.
Yeah. I'd like to hear your strategy. It sounds like you have a good one.
Yeah.
I think the most recent board meeting before this one, he mentioned some of the great successes he's had in the school system. Apparently, he's doing all sorts of neat stuff, which was news to almost everybody.
What we have here is a failure to communicate. Yeah. Just getting that stuff around the group would be something else. We need an ace reporter to interview people. We thought of that. Yeah.
I am going to ping the Dover Library, because I hadn't got my library card the other day because I needed to print something and I don't have a printer. They have all these computers there. What do you know? Computers in a library. And So, they're all running Windows, they're not even very set up very well for Windows. I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe they'd be open to something, so I'm going to see if I can get in touch with them.
Rob Lembry has a library project, on the wiki, no less. Long,
unrelated to, well, not unrelated, but different from what we're talking about. That was more along the lines of, let's have a library of CDs in the library so that people can check out the open CD or whatever and try it out. Not that that's a bad idea either.
Finally, there's been an increasing and ongoing number of lugs and groups which are sponsoring one-day events at various places. The Ohio Linux Fest, the Northwestern Linux Fest, it's went down in Jacksonville, Florida, the Ontario Linux Fest, and they start off small and usually either one or two tracks. They typically try and do it in a university or someplace like that. And, you know, they attract, well, usually in the beginning, they can get like 350, 400 people to come. But then over time, the Ohio Linux Fest is now around 2,500 people coming for 2 days, and they have like 3 or 4 tracks.
Is that the one that just happened?
Yep. Well, there's been a... It depends on the definition of just, okay? There was,
well, I mean, it was probably a month ago. I'm still on the UC group, which isn't really Linux user group, it's more general than that. Mm-hmm. But they just sent a huge, like, bunch of people there, you know, we're talking all about it. Because we used to hold smaller, like, install fests at the university that would pretty draw, you know, 50 people. Sometimes, I think when we got 100 people,
that's a lot of installs.
Yeah.
We get 20, 30 people maybe.
Do people
either in React or Yale?
The whole thing was we were pulling people from, like, not just from, like, the CD department, but we were pulling people from the, you know, like, from Mackey and from the art school that they had. There was a lot of people were really interested from there and getting into it for whatever reason.
Digital animation.
And so this was a recent thing?
This was since like 99.
Okay, well it's been frequently, the idea of should we have an install fest has been tossed out a couple of times and several times, and every time the answer has been from a bunch of old stick in the muds like myself, was like, I thought that Linux was easy to install now, we don't need to do it.
It's not true.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, one, that's wrong, and second of all, that the install fest is no longer about getting your X driver working, but more like educating people in using Linux.
We would typically put on, we'd have like 10 installs in one area or one room, because we split it up into many different rooms in the university, and we get the EDC's desk floor dedicated to us. And other places would be like various topics where you just have one of us who's like, you know, a member of the group, would give a talk about using the various programs like we actually tried to push LaTeX on the people at one point, and some people actually were somewhat receptive to it. The GIMP has always been really popular. It's like, when someone learns how GIMP works, they don't ever want to use any of the other, like, graphic software. It's like, that one just has so much stuff in it. And, what is it? OpenOffice seems to be really popular, too. It's like, when people just get past the fact that it doesn't work like Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office does, then
what?
Well, you know, especially like with the recent flip-flopping they've been doing, but yeah, it's like people start to like it a lot more, and they're kind of receptive to the fact that, oh yeah, I could like just go to a website and download it when I don't have it on the computer that I'm trying to use it on, versus like fighting with the fact that like, oh well, I have this Office 2003 document, and this system has Office 2000 and doesn't have the right language pack, you know, or something like that. And then these are also, a lot of them are people who like didn't even really ever get a chance to install Windows on the machine. And you know, just the idea of installing anything on the machine is can be a pretty big task for people who aren't.
That's a great observation. Some people complain that Linux is hard to install compared to Windows. And in fact, if you ask, most people have never installed Windows. And I can testify, sometimes that's hard.
Yes.
The Boston Linux User Group was just held InstallFest XXXLV.
Yeah,
whatever that
curious.
Comes out
Has anybody been to one recently? That's really what I was after. What's it like, and what should we do?
They have been working to get things done in advance. I haven't been, but I followed the discussions on their mailing lists. Lots of times they are getting a lot of hobbyists who are trying to get an unusual distro installed on a really unusual machine. And that's kind of the main attraction off to the side is trying to get this cool little, half a watt machine to run X Windows or something.
I don't call that an install fest.
Well, that's kind of important, but they also have the main distros. They have all of the instructions about, just bring your main CPU. We can supply the keyboards and the mice and the power supply, but bring a monitor, whatever the rules would be for that organization.
Well, I'm doing this TV.
Yeah. It has all of those nightmares, and that's typically the stuff that they're running into is people are showing up with a box and they have a 21-inch LCD screen at home of which they don't know resolution or how to get X Windows to configure with it, and there's a whole bunch of fun follow-on conversations that go on with that.
What's the vertical refresh rate?
Yeah, well, back in the good old days, you had to know that, or you could cause serious damage to your CRT. I have fried CRTs that way, it's true.
Unfortunately, they haven't made monitors like that in 20 years.
There's a lot of even computer science majors at some of the local schools who are running Windows who would love to have a dual boot system with Linux, but they're not really sure how to do that. And most of the easy installs that you get with Linux are fry the hard drive and install this new package, or install Linux into the spare partition space, and partitioning is still a little bit of black magic there. That's one place where I see people running into problems and having heebie-jeebies over their master boot records.
The new hardware that they have, or the new hardware that some people might have, for instance, I don't know how the schools are up here, if they have a requirement for, like, you have to have a machine that's so recent or whatever. Like the new Core 2 chips and the new Turion 64 chips, and even the new MacBooks, and MacBook Pros, like they all have really virtualization tech that's taken advantage of by various different packages. But you want to, I think like Zen is supposed to work with Windows now, so if they at least want to be able to get to, if they want to at least be able to use Office or something else that's their Windows program, I'm not sure how.
Well, step one is getting Linux to boot.
Yeah.
and Zen working with Linux at the same time is different than having it disk partitioned properly and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My feeling is that there's two types of people that you have come to an install fest, and this is really, it's the people that don't know anything, the dummies, the Linux for dummies. And then there's the people that you were talking about that really know about Linux, but they got this really weird thing. They're looking for somebody who's really better at Linux than they are to help them do this. And, I think that in order to grow the Linux marketplace, the best thing is to do this, the Gestapo method of installation, which is to say, here is this distribution that we have chosen for you because you don't know anything about Linux. And this is the easiest one for you. This is the one that most people have in the area. This is the one you're going to get the most help on. This is the one you're going to install. And oh, by the way, back up your whole system before you come.
Yeah, that's the approach that we took every time we did it, because it was the only one that would work. And so 2 months beforehand, or a month beforehand, or however much free time people had, we would just put that on machine, on as many machines as we can get a hold of, and just hammer it to death, trying to learn all the ins and outs, trying to learn how, the Wi-Fi control panel is going to crash if you, go to this pane, if the certain settings are set, so make sure you're prepared for that so that you can, use a net to kick it.
And what does the group think about, say, bringing a Windows machine? You've got a VMware player, and then we'll just slap on there and let you pop it in full screen and... Yeah, no risk, kind of, being folks moving with Linux versus, all right, let's jump off this cliff together.
Well, it's double-edged sword. On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, the risk is that makes it even easier for them to ignore the fact that they've got Linux on their computer now.
Well, when I resolved to learn Linux many, many moons ago and installed dual boot in my system, inevitably I was always in the wrong OS. That's a problem with the dual boot system, is if you still have to run your specialty packages in Windows, then you're never going to get around to trying out Linux. That's a problem with doing a dual boot install. But I think that's a nice thing to be able to offer people. you know, it's a step beyond the live CD where you get to get the impression that Linux is really, really slow.
Feed a VM machine to an external drive, install Linux, install VMware server, and install the Windows instance back in there.
Windows, Windows, yeah. That's not bad. That can be a pretty intense install.
It would be kind of intense.
Yeah, just if hours of disk thrashing to do that. That's a possibility.
If we should get the licenses from VMware, I will say that its machine importer is nothing short of magic. As in point,
is that part of the player server?
Then that's VMware workstation. As in point and click, and it finds a computer on the network, and now I've got an image of it running on my workstation too, in about 10 minutes.
Yeah,
like magic.
Yeah, VMware like in the past year after not touching it for like 5, and it has changed so much, and it's actually pretty. The last time I used VMware was when I went to I went to the hacker conference down in Atlanta, and we did their hacker, whatever it's called, the competition where you try and crack into each other's machines, the capture the flag thing. We did that, and the VMware was what they were shipping all the images on. And that was the last time I used it. That was 5 years ago.
I had VMware on my Linux system, but I had it set up as a server with Linux set up in VMware, set up as a server. I actually booted a diskless workstation off of my VMware-based Linux system. Worked like a champ.
The VMware server does not have the importer. That's one of their commercial products that you pay for. But if you've got Windows boxes to worry about, it's worth every penny.
So if we want to offer an install fest, I think we've covered all of the options, from single boot to double boot to VMware to Zen to God knows what. First, who's our target market? You know, if we're shooting for techies who are, you know, working at the tech and doing comp sci, they're probably very happy with the dual boot or even just a full blow it away install Linux install.
People who got a machine with Vista and decide that it sucks.
I would worry if I found somebody who didn't think it sucks. I haven't met them yet.
Across the board opinion, as far as I can tell, or at least about it. You didn't see that backlash from when XP came out.
There's a lot of...
Ben made a really good point about, just to expand on what you're saying, we can give someone a box and say, here, you got a Linux machine, have a nice day. But then what about beyond that? And if you could make it a track kind of thing where, hey, you know, we're gonna install this and now let's go learn Scrabble. You know, we're gonna have for the next 3 hours we're gonna have two different options for the general or each open office and Scrabble, and you know, so they can do something.
And after that, come to our meetings.
That'd be why if we could get the thing set up with VMware, that they get VMware on the Windows machine and they install Linux on top of that. They could use that during that whole conference. At the end of that, to say, well, if you've been satisfied with this, let's try and install it native. Okay.
If we come back to our next one in 2 months,
So kind of providing a little session on like basically how the software distribution model kind of exists in the open source community, because it's kind of a there's a big difference between that and like the people who are normally used to like, oh hey, well I'll go out to Micro Center and get the software that does my taxes.
Your source.
I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, introducing the one source for.
I like the idea of an install fest followed by a seminar or two of here's what you've got and here's how to use it.
Well, especially if you're going to do something like a pre-built VM in the VMware player. It's like, okay, give me your machine, I copy a VM, install VMware player, and so that you can immediately go into the learn how to use Linux session. Yeah. And that might be what convinces them to wipe their Windows box more than wipe my Windows box and force me to use it.
The only thing to bring up about that is sometimes people do see this as a way to get life out of their older hardware, and you don't want to do that with VMware, but I do think that's the concept of older hardware seems to be going away, at least in this country, because you can get a computer for a buck.
No, you're still going to get people showing up with a P3 300 with...
They're outside our target market.
Again, like the Myth TV install fest learning experience we had running directly into a wall, that re-advertising and making it clear, you know, coming up with some minimum specifications.
Most people there, with one notable exception.
Let's not even talk about that.
Had modern hard drive. There's nobody there with ancient stuff.
But I thought that was insightful of you at the beginning to say, we are setting our standard way up here. This is what everybody should have. So we avoid, you know, your old 286 box.
There are those people out there. Hell, I'm one of them. My only point is that I think that in this day and age, it's not too unreasonable to say, look, if your computer was built 10 years ago, this is the wrong meeting for you. Mm-hmm. This is for the 90% of the population that bought a new computer this week because their old one, they couldn't find it.
You know, saying you can't have, you even have a dedicated dinosaur bank on your closet. See what you can find in your closet. We'll see what you can find.
Yeah. We've got DSL, and we'll have ourselves a blast on 486s. Yeah.
And you can say to people, if you've already made your decision to go to Linux, and if you have this distribution installed, bring it on in, right? And you'd be running it native while everybody else is running it on the VM session. Mm-hmm. But one thing you really do need, I believe, is the same distribution. You need to, you know, if these people are going to be stepping them through, do this, click this, do that.
I don't have a little red hat on mine. I've just got this little lizard thing.
Yeah, no arguing about how we're going to configure it, how packages we're going to use,
the text editor we're going to use.
Which we had a little bit of that from at the MythFest too. It's like, oh, don't install that. I like this other package much better. It's like, well, why are you here?
You can install any version of Fedora 8 you want. Okay.
When I was writing the Linux for Dummies book, the publisher came back and said, oh, we want you to do a Linux Dummies for Turbo Linux, a Linux Dummies for this. And I says, no, they're a dummy. If they want a particular distribution, then they're not a dummy.
Flatware for dummies.
Yeah. They didn't listen to me. And they just
broke. Yeah, those books, you have to understand, it's not just the target audience, it's also the publisher.
There will be challenge.
So, you know, I think it, you know, but, so that's one thing. We could go after, you know, the newbies and show them all this neat stuff, and, you know, and then when you advertise, you say, hey, graphics package for manipulating photographs, you know, package for, you know, capturing audio and video, editing it, doing CDs and stuff. Make your YouTube thing here with free software.
I'd attend that.
All that type of stuff. And, you know, take your old 35s and 78s and make a, you know, and those, that's the type of stuff that people want to do, right? Nobody really wants to know about their computer. Just tools. Just
how many lawnmower user groups are there? It's just a tool. I don't want to know. Yeah, I pull the cord, it works. I pull the cord, it doesn't work, I get another one. Yeah.
But we'll save you $700 a year by telling you how to tune your lawnmower yourself. There'll be a lot of people
Might be interested in that. Yeah, that's true. You said the magic words, which was advertise. We've had some discussions about generally how to attract people to meetings, specifically for an install fest. How do we do outreach to those, the great unwashed out there? This sounds like we plan on a locality, like we decide to do this in Nashua, just picking a town at random, and we smooth talk the friend of ours who happens to write a column for the Nashua paper, and we try to get ourselves in the community column, you know, announce an activity 6 weeks in advance. We would need contact information for somebody who would actually be able to answer a phone so people could call up in advance, and have a web page where people could go and there would be the rules about what you can and can't bring and what we would give you and what they could expect.
Okay, so from somebody who's coached a whole bunch of organizations through this in the past, okay.
Yeah.
First thing you need is a theme and a target audience. Who are you going to go after? What's the theme going to be and stuff like that? You need to have a venue. You need to know about how much that venue is going to cost you, about what time frame it's available. You need to lock that venue, cast it down in stone. Okay, so then you can start to advertise, put out your advertising dates. You put up the beginnings of your advertising with a theme and the beginnings of what you're doing. You say, come back here often so that you can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. You figure out whether you're going to charge money for it or not. A lot of the times, you know, it's strange. If you make something free, people go, it can't be worth anything, I'm not going to come. Charge $20 for it, It helps you cover your costs, and at the same time, you know, people who register and pay $20 will probably show up. The people who register for free will probably not show up.
It's true.
Yep. Okay. In which case, you've ordered too much coffee and donuts and don't have any money to pay for them. Mm-hmm. You know, all this type of stuff, and plan for it a year out.
Plan for it what?
A year out. Don't try and do anything in less than a year. Number one, because it'll be hard to get the space in the first place. Number two, if you want to have any type of reasonable speakers to come in from any distance, you're going to need to give them plenty of time.
You're trying to put on a big show again.
It's not a big show. One day event.
That's a big show.
Well, it is a big show. It's a one-day event, and you want to get if it's just going to be a very small thing, you know, like the 20 or 50 university cafeteria, high school cafeteria, whatever.
We kind of started at an install fest and build it up from there. A facility like this, which has a fair number of power cords, power plugs around the outside, and even has wired Ethernet. They have internet 24/7 here inside. We could use a facility like this to do an install fest. This would work out pretty well.
I think we definitely need to.
Other than the location,
we want to start small and build up. You know, after we've got a couple of install fests where we've got 20 people or whatever working at once, we can move on to 50 people and then, you know,
the world. It's almost a different branch. You know, doing an install fest. BLU has been doing install fests forever.
They're going to run out of letters soon.
Yeah, they're going to run out of Roman numerals. It's true. Jerry has been running them forever. He installed Linux MIPS machine for me decades ago. So, this has been around forever. We could do start to think about doing a couple of these a year. There's a different track of should we do a conference, which is what I consider the one-day Ohio Linux Fest model of presentations. So seminars, classrooms, presentations. Oh, I like the idea of the install fest is not just slap a distro on the machine and say, there you go, you know, don't let the door kick you in the ass on the way out. But rather, sit them down and actually do some presentations, do some training, and show them open office, labels. Yeah.
Was install/info/training.
Almost 40 minutes left.
And you could even, if you want to take that to even further, you could, like Matt Dahmer was saying with YouTube, you could just advertise come learn how to do videos on YouTube. All software will be provided for free. And that software happens to be Fedora 8 running on VMware. That doesn't really matter. Because if you want people who want to do things, that's probably the hardest possible example of trying to get video capture stuff working.
How to do desktop publishing with Scribus, how to do labels with Glabel.
Even it would not be beyond the scope of the group to, if we wanted to do something with video where it was all with open source tools and we even did it on Windows. I don't believe it's outside of the scope of a Linux user group to promote open source software.
Yeah. I think it's putting a lot of stuff on the table, and I think what
I was looking for
first things
earlier
is how to decentralize the operation. Get Linux user groups from all across the country and from the world and say, well, okay, we'll do the Scribus presentation and share it with everybody so that there really isn't that much work. I mean, I think it would make a lot of sense to actually put out this little booklet that users could take, and it would have introductions on all the major packages, for example, that they'd be wanting to look at once they get their distribution installed, and all sorts of things that users would find very useful, but we're just a small group. We'd never have time to put that kind of stuff together. But if we work with other groups who would be interested in doing the same thing in their regions,
they might already have that stuff too.
Again, yeah.
Well, there's a million Linux development projects out on Linux documentation projects out on the web.
I thought there was just one major one.
Well, yeah, but there's
Then there's how to forge and.
There's a million half completed ones. Just like, you know, going to SourceForge looking for software. 50% of the projects are announced, but there's no software ever posted. You know, of what's left, 50% have version 0.1 alpha and nothing else posted. 50% of what's left of that, you know, and you finally get down to that 0.1% that actually has something in beta.
So that's still a large number.
Yeah, but when you start with 17 million, yes, that small amount is still enough that we have a scribeless and an open office and some awesome packages.
I love it when you download software that consists of a README file, a license file, and a C stub file. Main, whack whack, fix me, code here.
Been there, done that. Yeah. No, it would be interesting to see what else is out there. I asked this question 5 years ago with the group. I got a gig doing a 12-night training course at the local technical college on Lambda. By the end of the class, people actually had working, interactive, database-driven websites, starting from ground zero. We started with install, and we ended up with Apache actually running, serving data. Boy, did we talk fast. 40 hours, beginning to end. It was an exciting adventure. And the first question I asked is, somebody's already written this course. Somebody's already shipped something on land, right? So somebody's written this course. Could not for the life of me find a lesson plan out there that we could actually, you know, use as at least a framework to start with. So I think it would be a good idea to have that kind of stuff out there. I would welcome anybody has some suggestions and maybe we should
know. Well, now we can get your lesson plan on TedMinute.com.
No, actually Bruce Dawson and I and Bill Sconce did publish it using the open publication license somewhere.
It's on SourceForge somewhere.
Version 0.1 alpha. Yeah. And it's got a to-do right there to post the stuff. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's exactly the problem with everybody else did. They got done with the class. They said, oh, thank God. They went and got a beer and forgot all about posting. And I think that's probably a lot of that.
I think they ever wrote formal anything for the introduction to Unix class I did for my friends around a training center in Connecticut.
All of us made it that first 90%, and the FTP at somewhere was the one step we never got to.
Well, we definitely have, one of the problems we definitely have is by the we do something. When we get through with it, we are so sick of it that nobody wants to speak of it for at least a year.
Yes, I've been asking for some archives for the wiki about, you know, the Linux business show. We had one, we did it.
We don't
just about every meeting we talked to, you know, any of the shows we did at Yoakum's or a couple other things that we did. And everybody agrees that it would be a good idea that we have something put up there. And there's nothing in our archives. There's virtually no trace of what we did.
But this is the whole Linux thing about documentation. After you've written the code, you don't want to...
Hey, if it was hard to write, it ought to be hard to use. Right.
We'll do that specific to Linux.
It's human nature. That's why
nonsense. The help that comes with Microsoft Office is so useful.
And that's someone else writing it.
Yeah.
That's obvious by looking at it.
That's how they all work. Is they actually have separate documentation departments.
Well, a good friend of mine observed a while ago that one of the problems that groups like ours has is HRIP, high rate of idea production. We get a group like this together and we've come up with enough work to keep the rest of us busy, certainly through most of next year, not to mention jobs, life, and other things. And then it's a matter of getting around to actually doing anything.
And we'll have the same ideas at the next board meeting.
Well, I have my notes from the G&H Lug Summit from 2005 right here, and I bet you if I compared the two, they'd be almost word for word. I think all of these things are good ideas. I think the question is, how do we find individual volunteers who can be the lead person to actually run with any of them? That's more than anything what we need is we need, you know, the one person who's saying, okay, I will be the lightning rod, and I will volunteer to do X. Now everybody, you know, gather around and let's do something.
Well, one thing is taking the ideas and the minute notes and putting it out onto the general discussion list so that people might be able to actually raise their hands.
Mm-hmm. Know that it's being talked about.
How about, like, code jam sessions? You just sit down on a weekend for 3 hours and actually get stuff done.
Actually, the Python group did that. Successfully wrote code. It was the first time I've actually seen the Python group write code in years. It was quite the experience. We can thank Jim Cudstraw for that. He came up with the question.
I think we should thank Bill for I wasn't there, but I heard that he was the one who who was the keyboard operator with 12 people typing on it.
The ultimate and really bad extreme programming is the idea of pair programming where one guy types and 10 guys point out the typos. How annoying can you get? And he was very patient about putting up with that, and by the end of the night, we had working code. And we could actually parse the GNH log wiki and put together a little comma-separated value.
Okay, start with tabs and spaces.
What's that? We started with tabs and spaces, and then an argued about capitalization, and just went through the whole computing experience. We did. Oh, is it show and tell time yet?
Well, I was going to ask, are we still making significant progress forward?
I'm starting to feel like we're starting to spin the wheels in the sand, so I wanted to take one last look at the agenda before we call it a day. We're supposed to knock off at 4. We already talked about the unofficial board meetings. We've got contact with the meeting members of the board.
I thought I got one page.
That's good. There was only one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When I say we're done with the agenda, I'm being completely serious. We're done with the agenda.
I just wanted to say that out loud so that people could say, yeah, Ted actually made it all the way through the agenda. Okay. Can you confirm that?
How much does this cost?
It's, are we finished?
I think we're finished.
Oh, we're through.
Motion, second, all in favor say aye. All opposed are out of order. The meeting is over. We didn't, I was handing out the bylaws for reference.
Oh, okay.
Everybody should read them, memorize them, and there'll be a quiz at the next meeting.
They were the bylaws that were officially submitted to the state for Gunnelugs.
Okay.
State.
That's, these are the old rules we are operating.
These are the ones
we couldn't find a copy of the application that for membership and who was currently a voting member.
Membership is a marvelous discussion. I'll be glad to see that as soon as thanks for reporting.
Yeah, I don't need to beat
well.